Well, thank you and good morning. As you will notice, I'm not Annick Bertrand. She's the senior author of this paper, but she couldn't make it to the conference, so she asked me to present. I'm the second author, and we had two colleagues there working with us, Yves Castonguay and Gaëtan Tremblay. And what I'll try to do is talk about a little bit about the effect of temperature and increased CO2 on yield. I won't talk about the R2 value because we haven't completed the analyses. And this is a Canadian study. We were looking at a number of tame and native species. There hasn't been a lot of work done on looking at the impact of climate change on perennial crop species in Canada. And this is sort of one of the first studies really trying to have some understanding of what the climate change can do to our perennial crops. I won't spend too much time on this. You're all familiar with the climate change scenarios and the increase in CO2 and temperature. In terms of CO2, there's quite a wide range, but from 5 to 800 ppm. This will result in increase in temperatures around the world, also in Canada during the summer. Right now, I think the experts tend to say that it's about a 3 degrees Celsius increase, at least in the eastern part of Canada. So we can think of this increase in temperature and CO2 as having some impact on the growth and its value of range and forage species in Canada. We've done some previous work, very limited work, but some work on perennial species, some work that we did on alfalfa. We showed that by increasing the CO2 concentration, we increased the root and shoot growth of alfalfa, that resulted also in lower fiber concentration and lower nitrogen concentration. And we also did another study in which we look at different air temperatures on timothy, which is the main forage grass species in eastern Canada, and it's also grown in western Canada. And we found that by increasing temperature, we had a decrease in yield, and also a decrease in nutritive value. With timothy, which is a perennial cool season grass, the optimum temperature for growth is around 17 degrees Celsius. So as soon as you go above 17, we tend to have a decrease in yield, also a decrease in the nutritive value.
No moisture stress in any of
those. In those cases, no. These are two studies under controlled conditions, just looking at the impact of CO2 and temperature on these two species. So that brings me to the current study that we have, which is a Canadian study under the title of Sustaining Grassland Systems in the Face of Climate Change. And in that study, we want to look at the impact of increased temperature and atmospheric CO2 using, in terms of experimentation, two approaches. Some of our colleagues in Western Canada are using open-top chambers to look at the impact of increased temperature on rangeland species. That's what you see here. But today I'll be focusing mostly on the work that we're doing under controlled conditions using growth chambers, in which we're interested in looking at interaction between CO2 concentration, temperature, and other factors, which could be species, nitrogen stress, or water stress. And this is what I'll be talking about today. We also have another component to this project, which is a modeling component, where we're using a grass growth model to look at the impact of climate change on growth and nutritive value of perennial crops. So what I'll be specifically talking about today is this study where we look at 10 forage species from across Canada. We have a number of species from Western Canada that other C4, C3 species, a little blue stem, blue grama, Kentucky bluegrass, Western wheatgrass. Some species that are mostly grown in Eastern Canada, they're all C3 species. So we have a grass species, timothy, and two legume species, alfalfa and red clover. And then there are a number of species that we can find in both eastern and western Canada, some meadow brome grass, tall fescue, and reed canary grass. I'm from eastern Canada, so I'm more familiar with these ones here than the western species. So what we do, we put these 10 species on with four growing conditions. With two CO2 concentrations, 400 and 500 ppm, and two temperature regimes. We have day-night temperatures of 22.10 or 25.15. And one thing you'll probably notice that we use a fairly low concentration of increased CO2. We feel that a lot of studies are done where they use a fairly wide range that might not be happening, I guess. So we use a fairly optimistic scenario here where CO2 would sort of level off at 500.
By optimistic, you mean more realistic.
Realistic, and maybe hopefully society will make changes that we won't reach anything above that. So that's what we use in this case. So we have these four conditions, each of those in one broad cabinet. So we had a factorial experiment with two CO2 concentration, two temperatures, and we repeated the experiment twice, so we had replications in time. We planted the 10 species, and we gave them 6 weeks of establishment. Then we cut them with what we call time zero. We let them regrow for 4 weeks, and we took a first measurement, so the first cut, and we had a regrowth of 4 weeks, and we cut them again for the second cut. So in terms of the results, the first slide here is just to give you an overview. Quick overview of what happened. We have our four treatments here, like the 400 ppm 22, 500 ppm 22. These are the daytime temperatures, and then the 400 and 500 ppm at 25 temperatures. So as you can see, and this is the shoot biomass, or the harvestable biomass in terms of a forage, and that's a total of cut one and cut two. That's the number of grams per pot. And overall, as you can see here, there's not any major effects of either CO2 and temperature. That's sort of the first, when you look at this, that's the first message. In this study, there was not a major impact of CO2 and temperature overall when we look at sort of averaging over all the species that were in the study. Of course, you'll notice that some of the species had a fairly low yield, and these are mostly, well, they're all native species from Western Canada that tend to have much lower growth rate and yield than the other cultivated species. And I don't know if you can see it here, but in the middle, these are some of these native Western species. So we're working with quite a wide range of species in terms of yield potential. Now I'll look at more specifically at the results for some of the species. As I mentioned,
three species are there.
Some of them are C4 species.
Yeah. The first two were C4.
Yes. So if we look at the overall, as I mentioned in the first slide, most of the species did not respond to CO2, to increase CO2 concentration. And that was a bit of a surprise to us. We expected some response of the species to CO2. There were only three species that had a positive response to high CO2. Alfalfa, here on the left, red clover and tall fescue. These are measurements from the first cut. If you look on the left, we had 400 and 500 ppm at 22 for alfalfa, and 500 ppm at 25 degrees Celsius for alfalfa, and so on. So a positive response of alfalfa to CO2. And red clover and tall fescue in the first cut. At the second cut, only alfalfa responded positively to increased CO2. And these results on alfalfa confirmed previous results that we had obtained under controlled conditions a few years back. For the other two species, it seems that it was a transient response. We had response in the first cut, but no response at the second cut. If we look at the root biomass in the plant response to CO2, only alfalfa responded to increased CO2. And again, that's confirmed what we had seen previously in another study. Now, if we look at the effect of temperature, then we had different responses for C4 and C3 species. Two of the warm season native species responded positively to increased temperature, Little Blue Stem and Lugrama. And these are the results from the first cut of the 22 and 25, 22-25. We see a positive response to temperature of these warm season species. And again, at the second cut, we had a positive response. In terms of the cool season species, the C3 species, the other way around, we had a negative response to increased temperature in both Timothy and meadowbrome grass. And in the case of Timothy, we had seen something like that previously in other studies, so it was a confirmation of what we already sort of knew. In terms of root biomass, the only species that responded to temperature was alfalfa. We had a negative response to increased temperature for the root biomass of alfalfa. So, conclusion, or in summary, we haven't all analyzed the data yet, but the legumes, in general, tended to respond to increased CO2. That was very obvious with alfalfa, and there was some response in red clover. But the grasses did not respond to increased CO2, and we expected a response at least of the C3 species, but that did not occur in a study. For some of the species, the positive response seemed to be transient. We had a response at the first cut, but no response at the second cut, so maybe there was some adaptation there to elevated CO2. In terms of the effect of temperature, the warm season had greater yield with increased temperature. But the cool season species tended to have a lower yield, and this was kind of expected. The response to elevated CO2 and temperature, at least what we can see so far, is seem to be species dependent, so we can't, I think it might be difficult to generalize these results for all species. We're probably going to have to look at species-specific responses. The work, as I mentioned earlier, is not completed. We're in the process of doing the analyses of the nutritive value of that material to see what is the impact on things like vegetability, NDF concentration, crude protein concentration, and so on, which has significance in terms of livestock feeding. So that's all I had to present. Thank you. Thank you.
Before I let others ask, I will ask you myself. The water relations and interactions. Did you assume that this was never a limiting factor?
In the study that we just presented today, water is what was not limiting. That was the. But as I mentioned, we.
You want to speculate? What if water were a limiting factor?
In this overall program, we're going to run three studies. This was the first one where we wanted to look at interaction between CO2. Temperature and species. We just completed a second study where we look at interaction between CO2 temperature and nitrogen stress on one of those species. And next winter, well, we haven't really decided yet, but we have another experiment planned in which we'll look at temperature, CO2, and water stress. So
we have much to look forward to.
That's right. So it's in the planning. That's a good question, and we always wonder when we do these things under controlled conditions. You know, it's not really the real world. What happens under real conditions? And that's a good question. I don't have a really good answer. We went through the establishment period, so the plants were established, but it's not quite the same thing as in the field. And because we wanted to look at these interactions, it's almost impossible to get in the field. And that's something you cannot really do easily. And what we're going to do, we're going to use some of that information in our modeling efforts. And I think the model that we have has been validated based on data from field conditions. So hopefully through the modeling exercise, which in some ways reflect more what happens in the field because it was modeled, it was calibrated and validated against field data, I think that we might have some good answers. But obviously, we have to be careful between growth cabinets and field. That's a simplification of reality. Yeah.
Any other questions?
Yes. And you said, in my head, are these grasses all C3s, even in the warm season?
No, they were two C4.
They were two C4 species, yeah.
The two top ones. Yeah. It would be good, by the way, just a suggestion. Please don't take it seriously. To give the botanical names,
sure, yeah.
The common names, because those of us who come from other locations and cultures would understand.
That's good advice.
Any other questions? Yes, please.
Could Newton limitations play a role in explaining some of the differences you saw, like the legumes might respond more because they fix their own nitrogen compared to others?
Yeah, that would be a good hypothesis, I think, to follow. We haven't looked at that yet, but I think that's the one that's one possibility, that the nitrogen fixation under high CO2, the plant is not efficient in nitrogen because of that. So that would be certainly a good hypothesis. I agree.
If the legumes were properly inoculated.
And other nutrients are not limiting. If you have P limitation, you might not get the fixation as well. I think the nutrient status would be important in some sort of
yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, this negative response to higher temperature by the C3 grasses, this is something you refer to as having been found before in Timothy?
Yes.
Where does that, it's very disturbing, where does that come from? And might you speculate on what causes that adverse response?
Well, these are cool season grasses, and they're adapted to cool seasons. And most of these species, they have an optimum temperature for growth of between 17 and maybe some of the other 20. But that's the range in which they, and you can see it if you look at fields of C3 species like Timothy and orchard grass, they'll do well when it's cool. But as soon as it's too warm, they don't do as well. They're just adapted to those conditions.
I was wondering, is there an effect of warming on the grass phenology that might partially explain this response, a quicker phenological cycle?
Yeah, there's certainly an effect on phenological development. We've seen that in one of the studies that we've conducted previously. And I'm not sure if that would be related to the tolerance to the effect of temperature on yield. That's a good point. I'm not sure if the two would be related. Yeah.